Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, October 2nd. And today, talking about the LeBron James-less Cleveland Cavaliers as the post-LeBron era begins. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Give me a follow, by the way, on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Today, we're going to be talking about an interesting article from our guy Rod Beard of the Detroit News, which might reflect where many of you listeners are at this point as the Pistons season nears in a couple weeks. We're also going to be talking to Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs about the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm interested to hear what your takes are about the Cavs this year, as we said, in year one of the post-LeBron era. We're going to go around the Central Division before the season gets going here. I don't want to bog us down with every single team in the NBA or maybe every team in the Eastern Conference, but I figure we see the Central Division teams four times. Their success and the success of the Detroit Pistons are somewhat aligned because of that and because of just how it shakes out. There's some interesting teams in there when you look at Indiana, Milwaukee, Chicago, and Cleveland. And today we're going to start off with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and thanks to Chris Manning for joining us there. But first I want to talk about the Rod Beard article from the Detroit News that I saw the other day, five takeaways from training camp. And if you read the top five takeaways that he has, you'll have a pretty good idea, I think, of where Rod Beard's head is coming into the season. Number one, he says, Dwayne Casey is making a difference. Talks about the connection of players that he's making with guys like Andre Drummond. Number two, leading into that, Andre Drummond is poised for his best season. And this, of course, coming off what we all believe was probably his best season last year, or possibly if you want to go back to 2016 and say that was his best year, but I would say last year was his best year. Number three, Reggie Jackson is getting healthy, and we know the numbers of what Reggie Jackson's health has to do with the Pistons' success for going into the season. Number four, Rod has the Pistons have wing options and good ones, talking about Reggie Bullock and Stanley Johnson and Luke Kennard and Glenn Robinson III. I would argue that, sure, it's an improved group when you look at the bench and the starters for the wing, but I would say it's still below average, and those guys certainly aren't stars, any of them, in a league where there's athletes all over the floor and a lot of teams have a lot of good wings at the twos and threes and even four positions. And number five, Rod here has young guys are going to play somewhere, and that's in a reference to Grand Rapids, how some of the players like Bruce Brown and Kyrie Thomas might be up and down throughout the season from the G League to the NBA, and that remains to be seen. But specifically talking about those first four things that Rod had as his takeaways from training camp, really does sound like Rod is drinking the Kool-Aid in some way. It sounds like he's all in for the Pistons this year, and it's October, and in some ways you're getting mentally prepared for the full season, through April, maybe even May, if you're optimistic, and you don't want to go through this whole thing, especially at the very beginning, with a bad attitude, be negative and defeatist, especially when that's your job day in and day out. And we have enough of that around here, especially in the media, especially on things like sports radio here in Detroit. Enough negative thoughts and opinions about all the teams, including the Pistons. And I can relate to where Rod's coming from. You'd much rather look at the bright side with a lot of this stuff. But, and I don't want to yell and talk about how angry I am with this franchise and this microphone every day, but it's indicative of me that Rod, who, like I said, he's probably the dean of the group of writers who covers the Pistons, that he sounds like he's kind of all in with this group at this point. I'd be interested to see if he has a prediction at some point about the record and where the seeding in the playoffs, if he has them in the playoffs, of where this team will be on the Eastern Conference pecking order. But like I said, Chris Manning, will have him on the show here in a little bit, but he had me on his show, so we talked about the Pistons. One of the questions he asked me was, why are Pistons fans excited? What are the reasons that Pistons fans have some optimism going into this season? And I guess if I could go the other way on that too and say, you know, what are the things that are going to unravel this Pistons season if you think it's more of a negative outlook for you and how this Pistons season is going to go? But here's my question to kind of bring both of those sides into it. What is your bold prediction for this season, whether it be a positive thing or a negative thing? Is Dwayne Casey going to win his second straight Coach of the Year? Is Luke Kennard going to step up and be the fourth best player on this team by a wide margin? We talk about the big three in Detroit. I know it's kind of a way of looking at comical group of big three when you compare it to like a Bosch, Wade, and LeBron when those guys were in their primes. But you know, three guys who are clearly starters in the NBA, and then a bunch of guys from the next tier for the Pistons group who are, you know, maybe fringe starters if you want to be nice, and or bench players if you want to be, you know, a little bit more negative about it. So maybe one of those guys steps up and becomes the fourth real solid NBA starter out of that group. Or do you have another bold prediction? Are you negative about it? Do you have a bad feeling about the season? Do you think Andre Drummond goes backwards in his free throw development? Do you think Blake Griffin gets hurt early in the season? I don't know. It's certainly, we know the history of injuries with Reggie Jackson and Blake Griffin, and it would be easy to make that prediction, and probably a pretty good prediction that those guys are going to miss, you know, a quarter of the season apiece or something like that based on their histories. But, you know, hopefully you've come up with something more better than that and more with your bold predictions. So that's what I'm asking you guys. What's your bold prediction for the season? You can reach out to me on social media, send along an email at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com, or send us a text on the new Google Voice line, or leave us a voicemail on the Google Voice line. We'll play that sometime before the season starts. We'll do a bold prediction segment on one of these shows here as we talk to you guys. Let me know what you think for the fans. So if you want to leave a voicemail or send along a text to the Google Voice line, that phone number is 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666 Vinny Johnson, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills, 810-666-1546. But Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. Wednesdays, it's Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursday, it's the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Fridays, you get Matt's picks. So check out Locked On NFL like I do almost every day, and you can get your fantasy team, get your gambling down for the season here as it really is. We're 1/4 the way through. I was in Allen Park in the locker room talking to the Lions, did an article for the Detroit News that you could check out in Tuesday's paper and also at DetroitNews.com, where we talked about the quarter mark of the season and where the Lions are at. Obviously, you can't hide from that disappointing 1-3 start to the season. But up next, we're going to hear from Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs about the Cleveland Cavaliers, one of the Pistons' Central Division rivals. But you've heard me talk about advertising, and guess what? I'm actively looking for more than advertisers. Now that I'm back in Detroit here for Locked On Pistons, if your company wants to reach that key demo of men between the ages of 18 and 44, provincial Piston fans that probably have ties to Metro Detroit and an interest in spending their dollars locally, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% of those between the ages of 18 to 44. All sorts of daily dedicated listeners. If you're interested in reaching that group, email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
All right, and now we're being joined by Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavs. You can find him on Twitter at CWMWrites. Also writes all sorts of stuff about the Cavs on various websites. Chris, how's it going so far with you this offseason?
It's going good. It's an interesting time, I think, to follow the Cavs. I think there's a lot we just don't know, and there's something I think sort of interesting about that, just because I think even though LeBron could take you to a certain point, I think this is a whole different reality. And as much as I think I'm going to get to game 41 and be like, oh, this is a lot worse, I think there's something kind of interesting about what they're facing right now.
Yeah, I think as a Pistons fan of an older age like myself, I can kind of relate to that, because obviously you like having those successful times. You like getting to the NBA Finals. But there is something new and refreshing about kind of a turn of the page. I can remember the going to work era. It compliments of the Cleveland Cavaliers in a lot of ways. That era kind of ended, and it ended a little bit slowly year after year, whereas you guys looks like the era take the Band-Aid off right away. But like you said, do you think fans are kind of excited for something new in a weird way, although you might kind of regret it in a couple months?
Yeah, so I it's an interesting question. So if anyone wants like a whole podcast about this, actually one of my best friends, who is a diehard Brown fan more than he is a Cavs person or an Indians fan, his name is Dylan Silver, works at Cleveland Magazine. Him and I talked about this at length, but my general thesis on this is I think it's going to be really, I'm very, very curious to see like what a preseason game crowd looks like and sort of what the home opener looks like, because this is a very exciting time for the other two sports franchises. And I think if all things were equal, my gut tells me that the Browns and Indians would be more popular in Cleveland than the Cavs. I think it's just that's the makeup of the city. I think the Browns in particular, as everyone sort of knows, are the defining sports franchise in Cleveland, for better or worse, and often it's been worse. But I think, you know, re-signing Kevin Love is interesting. I think there is some hype around Colin Sexton. I want to see how that translates if he struggles. I think you have some hardcore fans like and people that really follow the team like myself that really, I think Jetty Osman is interesting. I think Larry Nance, being the son of the original Larry Nance and being so in love with the city, I think really kind of plays things up. But it's going to be really interesting if they're really bad and not fun to watch and are struggling in game 50 and are out of the playoffs by then, which I think is pretty possible, and they trade off a bunch of guys and go for the draft. I wonder what the vibe will be. I don't think it'll necessarily be as bad as last time, and anyone following the NBA when LeBron went to Miami and saw how bad it got until they got lucky sort of knows what that looks like. So I don't think it'll be that bad, but I think there's potential for it to be pretty bad. What the ceiling is, maybe they sneak in the playoffs in the eight as an eight seed because the East is just maybe kind of bad, but that to me even seems sort of unlikely.
Yeah, and I think looking at the offseason here, the big question, other than obviously LeBron James leaving, which you've sliced up multiple times, I'm guessing, and every podcast in the world has talked about the ramifications of that. But looking forward with the Cavs, you got the extension for Kevin Love this offseason. Is there any indication on how, I mean, will this just be throw him in like he did, he was in Minnesota? Or is that guy even still inside of Kevin Love at this point? I mean, is there any indication on how Tyronn Lue's going to use him and what Cavs fans might be expecting from what is now their best player?
So I think the general assumption is that we are going to see a version of that. And to hear the Cavs talk in training camp and at practice, they're talking as if they're going to be passing the ball more and relying on ball movement more and not as much dribbling. That to kind of say what Channing Frye talked about on Monday, that's sort of the indication, I think, of where they think they're headed. And that, to me, would lead me to think Kevin Love at the elbow, Kevin Love post-ups, that kind of just kind of offense. But I also think we don't know. This is a Kevin Love that his body is very different than it was in Minnesota. He's a lot more healthy. Just physically in terms of his health, of in terms of his weight, he just looks like he's a more lean person now. He doesn't have all that bulk anymore necessarily. He's had back injuries and he's had hand injuries since, and the back in particular, how does he hold up as the lead option in an 82 game season? There are questions we don't know. And look, we just don't know what kind of coach Ty is without LeBron. His whole tenure with the Cavs is really defined by LeBron and what he did around LeBron and how he connected to LeBron in at first in 2016. So we just don't really know what kind of coach Ty Lue is in a non-LeBron capacity. And look, I mean, you take the guy out of any situation, it completely changes. You have an all-star in Kevin Love. You have other good players and good young interesting players now. Maybe not a ton of them, but you have some of them. And they made some interesting free agent signings. They have some veterans around. There's some interesting stuff here. But we just, again, I don't think we know yet what to get. But my guess would be Kevin Love has to be the focal point. And if he's not, that to me would be really concerning. If they come out and they're running things through like George Hill or you know, running things through Rodney Hood, and it's not a Kevin Love-centric thing, then what was the point of signing him to the extension in the first place?
Yeah, and I guess that's another one of my questions, thinking about the Detroit roster and the Cleveland roster, really similar situations in that Detroit trading for Blake Griffin last year, the Kevin Love extension, guys who were very good as young players who, like you said, a lot of injuries, and then now big money to be the best player on the team. Was it unanimous that Cleveland fans were happy to keep Kevin Love around for the big money this offseason, or was it half and half, or were a lot of fans out there saying rebuild the whole thing, start from the ground up?
I think most people have been good with it. I think people like that he was willing to sign it. I mean, obviously he was going to take that money. I think they like that the franchise isn't going to tank. I think that would have, I think, drove some people away. And I think they do like the fact that there are guys from the 16 title team around. I think Love, Thompson, JR, Channing Frye's back, obviously. I think you have guys like that have been around that they love. And Kevin is a guy that is a star. He's an all-star. He's really embraced. I think the city, the longer he's been here, I mean, everyone sort of, I think, knows this in terms of, where his standing was with Kyrie. But I think it's sort of remarkable that he's the last guy standing of those three and that he decided to stay and didn't even give himself a chance to take meetings next summer and look at New York, look at Los Angeles, places that you would think he might want to play in and live in, and cities he might want to be in other than Cleveland. But I think people are pretty excited about it. I think him as a player, if he can have a really good year, that would, I think, mean a lot. But again, I think there's just so many things we just don't know, and we just don't know how the no LeBron thing just impacts things so much. There's not a lot of, all the data we have sort of suggests that the role players were not very good, and if LeBron's not there to prop them up, what does that look like? And I think it could get kind of ugly. even if Kevin Love is like a 2010 player, like it could be really bad.
Yeah, and that was kind of my next question, is that obviously that was all the talk of the last, especially the last year, that LeBron was kind of carrying this team that was not very good around him. But is there some positive spin that LeBron is just such a difficult guy to kind of play with in some ways, and that the pressure's on, you know, you're in the NBA finals when maybe guys aren't quite ready for that role? Is there a little bit of a feeling that a little bit less pressure, obviously such a commanding presence, that maybe some of the guys will benefit from him not being around in some ways? And are there particular guys that you're looking at that might, you know, benefit from that whole circus from not being around the locker room? And there's some guys that you can maybe see taking a big step or two forward?
The guy that I am most intrigued by, that was, I think Colin Sexton obviously is the guy we're all looking at, just kind of see what he is, because he's their first pick post LeBron. But the guy in terms of who was there last year that I'm very intrigued to sort of see what happens with him is Jetty Osman. I think right now, I think that he's going to start, which I think is really interesting. I think the way that they're setting up the starting lineup, which is going to be George Hill, Rodney Hood, Jetty Osman, Kevin Love, and then depending on the matchup, according to Ty, at least for now, it'll be either Tristan or Larry Nance, depending on the size of the opposing center. So if like the Cavs are playing the Sixers, Tristan starts. If they're playing the Pistons, you know, I'm assuming Tristan starts against Drummond. But if it's a team with a more lean center, you know, you're probably getting Nance in that game, more of Nance in that game at least. But Jetty's a guy that now is going to get a lot of minutes. I think he made a push for some last year, but didn't quite get them. But now he's in a position where he might get to create. He might get to take on more of an offensive load. Defensively, I think it's very clear that there's at least a very good chance that he's going to be asked to defend the best wing on opposing teams. And that's a lot to ask of him. It might be asking too much of him, but this is a guy that's going to actually get a chance to compete this year and do things and try to prove that he belongs in an NBA and that he's more than maybe just a high level role player, that maybe he's an interesting foundation piece. And look, we saw glimpses of it last year. He had some really fun moments. He's a really earnest, fun, just positive guy. And he's still really a kid in all of this, but he's a really, really interesting piece in terms of what he could be, because he just has shown flashes of this potential overseas and in summer league and in the G League last year and in a couple of moments in the regular season. No LeBron, he's the guy that's going to fill that vacuum, I think, more than anyone in terms of just the minutes at the small forward spot. And I just want to see what happens with him. It could be bad. There's going to be some mistakes. There's a 0% chance he'll ever be as good as LeBron was ever, just because LeBron is maybe the greatest ever. But Jetty's the guy, I think, that benefits just from LeBron not being there, because he actually gets a chance to play now.
And what about Colin Sexton? You mentioned the freshman from Alabama. Just the last season, I really enjoyed watching him play in the SEC during that freshman season. Coming in as a rookie now, what is kind of the early returns on him? Do you expect him to maybe supplant George Hill at some point in that starting lineup? Or do you see that maybe the keys get turned over to him if things go south, maybe in the first half of the season? What do you kind of see his rookie year looking like?
Well, we're already seeing some chatter about the organization wanting to play the younger guys and Ty maybe not wanting to. So that, I think that's something to watch. In my ideal world, I think he's a guy that gets a lot of time with Kevin Love, a lot of time with Jetty. I think I'd like to see him play with Hill. But there's a situation right now where if he's coming off the bench, he might be playing with Jordan Clarkson, and that's just a really weird stylistic fit. I don't quite like that for Sexton. I think that's a situation where he could get very easily frozen out of the offense to some degree if Clarkson's there dominating the ball and kind of pushing him out of the way. But I'm intrigued with him. I'm not a big college basketball guy, so he gets drafted. I consult all the draft nicks that I'm friends with that can tell me about this. But I liked what I saw in summer league to the extent that there was an offense there. He was very aggressive. He goes after the rim, and I'm getting to talk to him. I've talked to him a couple times now. He's a guy that I think has a good head on his shoulders. He doesn't take everything too seriously, but he's very, very competitive. He's very, I think, driven to make a point and to kind of grind and make a name for himself. This is a guy that I think is going to play a bajillion miles an hour all the time. He doesn't really have any other speed right now. I think that's going to be really endearing. I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes. I think there's going to be a lot of sloppy play from him sometimes, but I think he's a guy that if things go well, he's probably starting by the end of the year. And again, I do think the best way for him to develop would be to get time with Kevin Love, time on the floor with George Hill. But right now, we just don't know how those rotations are going to work out. As we record this, no preseason game for the Cavs yet, just a scrimmage. I don't even think we'll have a good read on this until we get like 10 games of regular season data to sort of pick through this. But I really think he's going to be in a situation where how Ty handles this will tell us a lot about Ty, but also sort of dictate what kind of situations he's in. And again, if he plays with Jordan Clarkson, that is not a, I personally, that is just the worst case scenario.
Now, how do you, I hate to put you on the spot here, Chris, of Locked On Cavs, but as we look at the Central Division, that you got Indiana, looking at the Vegas totals, I think Indiana slightly over Milwaukee in terms of the win total, a little bit of a gulf there of about five games or so, and Detroit kind of sitting by themselves in third place in the Central Division, another little bit of a four or five game gulf, and then Cleveland, I believe, about one game ahead of Chicago. Is there, and I know that a lot of the Locked On hosts like myself maybe have a little bit more of a, you know, optimistic view of how their team's going to do in some cases, although some hosts are beaten down so much by their franchise that it might be the other way around. Do you see any reason when you look at Cleveland and the other four teams in that division that somebody might be overrated when you look at that, or underrated? Are there some things that you think might shake down differently than how the quote-unquote experts say it might?
My thing with the Cavs is, like, I think that I wonder what their defining quality is, right? Like, and I think you look at these other teams that they all sort of have something they can probably rest their heart head on, that they can bank on being productive. The Bulls might just score a lot of points. They're going to be atrocious on defense, but that team might just score a ton of points on the Markkanen injury. I think that just came down is not something that will, you know, impact that in a positive way, but it's something that they still have Jabari, they still have Zach LaVine, they're going to get buckets. You know, the Pistons, like, they have a good, really good coach now. I really like the Dwayne Casey hire. They have Drummond, they have Griffin, like, they have good quality players if they're healthy. The Bucks have Giannis. The Pacers were a surprise last year, and I'm really high on them in a Victor Oladipo lead year. I like the moves they made this summer. This is a weird division. I just don't know really what the Cavs identity is. Like, I want to just ask you this, like, when you look at this Cavs roster and you sort of project what the Pistons are going to be up going against, like, do you see something in this Cavs team that you actually think is like their defining quality? Because right now, as I look at the lineups possibilities, I look at all the data I possibly can on guys, I just don't know. And some of that is LeBron, just the fact that he's not there really kind of shredding that for me, but I just don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I hate to be simplistic about it, but I think it comes down to Kevin Love and what kind of guy you have, what kind of health he has. And I think with Blake Griffin, it's probably along the same lines. I think Pistons fans can be pretty sure what they're getting with Andre Drummond, maybe right around last year, maybe a little bit of a slight improvement being he's still just 25 years old. And Reggie Jackson will probably get hurt at least for a little bit of the season. And then is Blake Griffin, you know, going to be productive enough to carry a team to the playoffs? And I think Kevin Love, the same questions are around him. He hasn't done it in a long time by himself. And but then you're going to need that second and third impact players. And as you look down the roster of the Cavs, I think there are chances. I don't know if Osman's quite that kind of player, if Colin Sexton's ready to be that kind of player yet, and what the careers of George Hill and guys like that going forward, and Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance, what those guys look like in a post-LeBron era as young guys themselves that should be able to keep taking steps forward in their career. Now, do the pieces fit? Is the defense enough? You know, is Kevin Love that kind of no-brainer all-star as opposed to maybe a fringe all-star that he's been these last couple years? You know, is he that guy anymore? So I kind of go right with Vegas, actually. I actually would flip probably Milwaukee just over Indiana for the first spot with just the progression of getting Budenholzer in there as the coach. And of course, the natural disrespect that everyone has had of the Indiana Pacers and not really believing what they're seeing over the past year. Like you said, a very good team and one of the better top players. But we still like to see a little bit more from them without those, you know, headliner top guys that you see throughout the league.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Kevin Love thing is just because if he gets hurt or if he just isn't what they need him to be, I think you're in trouble. Like, I love George Hill. I think he's great. I think there are teams that should be looking and trying to trade for that guy. But I think he can't really carry a team in the way Kevin Love can. If Nance doesn't take a step forward, there's some questions there. And, like, you know, I get why they use the trade exception to get Sam Decker. I don't think Sam Decker is very good. David Nwaba, I like as a defender. I like the rolling the dice on him in a 1-year deal, not a shooter. You have, you know, Jetty could struggle. He's going to struggle. You know, can you find minutes for Zizic? And is Zizic actually any good as a center? There are just these things I don't know. The more and more I think about it, and this is a little bit maybe because I just I need to see the Cavs actually like prove that they're capable of doing something. This is an organization that in the post LeBron era, part one in 2011, after the decision, they got had to get lucky to get out of that hole, right? Like, this isn't a team that like built through sustainability and built through a culture. And they're talking about that being like their laurels now, like the basis of what they want to be. I don't see it. And I need to see them do it before they can like say that's what they're going to do. I get why they're saying that. It's a good sales pitch. It's a good smart thing to say, but I don't see that there right now. Things are going to change. It's going to take some time. It's why you bring guys like Channing Frye back, but I need to see them actually do it before I can say like they're going to just kind of make this year the best possible, because I just don't know if they can be trusted to do that right now.
Yeah, and I don't know Dan Gilbert, as we know here in the city of Detroit, as a guy who's not going to sit back and not make the kind of big splashes that maybe he wants to make to rebuild this team as quickly as possible.
Them being linked to Jimmy Butler tells you everything you need to know about that, right? Like, that is a move that, like, in terms of assets, what it probably would cost to do that does not make any sense for a team that would not be able to re-sign him in a year. But it's the big flashy thing, and Jimmy Butler and Kevin Love probably get you to the playoffs and puts butts in seats, even if a year from now Jimmy Butler's walking away for nothing and you gave up a young player and likely picks and to do that. So like when that happened, I was like, of course, like this is a Dan Gilbert move right here in the Jimmy Butler linkage.
Yeah, like you said, and we know all about Dan Gilbert here in Detroit, he owns pretty much the entire downtown Detroit district, and rumors are abound that he might be looking into buying the Detroit Tigers as he's getting out of the casino game right now. I don't know if you guys have been following those rumors in Cleveland or not. But speaking of Cleveland, you mentioned it before, the Indians getting started. I got to ask you one question about them. As Detroit Tigers followers here in Detroit, we're pretty much numb to baseball right now. But the Indians, in past years, coming in as maybe the favorites going into the playoffs and some of the best records in baseball over the past few years, now coming in a little bit under the radar as having, you know, mauled the horrible AL Central this year. Is there like a little bit of a quiet confidence around Cleveland that just because maybe everyone's not talking about them, the pressure might be off a little bit, that this could be the year?
I think so. And I think Lindor and Jose Ramirez are not appreciated enough for being as good as they are and as being as fun as they are. Those guys are two bona fide superstars in their primes. You know, you don't know how long it's going to last. They're two of the very best players in baseball, and they're just so fun. And like, they have a bunch of characters on this team. They're getting sort of healthy at the right time. They've had a lot of work this year. If Bauer can kind of be himself after missing a bunch of time and these things, I think it'll be really fun. And I think maybe people, at least I'm not, you know, that's the team I still sort of root for. I don't necessarily like root for the Cavs anymore, but in terms of the Indians, like, I want to see that baseball team like do something really cool. But I'm also like, I know how good the Red Sox are. And I know that like the AL Central is like really, really bad. The Tigers were bad this year, and all these, like, it was just an easy way. And I want to see them do it in the playoffs and see if they can, you know, get past Houston and then go from there. But it's really, really exciting to just sort of like know. I think one of the fun things about all this is that like they sort of know that even if things are complicated, they know that things are kind of tough with all these three teams. Like they're still, the Cavs are in a tough spot. The Browns are still kind of the Browns, even if Baker might be great. There's still like this hope of a championship, and that's kind of fun to see how people react to it in real time.
Yeah, just thinking about the sports fan dynamic between Detroit and Cleveland, it's not like Michigan, Ohio State, where if you ask a Michigan fan their favorite team, they say Michigan. Who's your second favorite team? It's whoever's playing Ohio State that weekend. I don't think it's that way in Cleveland. I think that obviously the cities are rivalries, especially in basketball. That, you know, they're teams that have battled in the playoffs, but it's not like Ohio State, where I think when the Indians go to the playoffs and go to the World Series, that I think the Detroit fans kind of root for the Rust Belt, you know, the team of the Midwest, the overlooked Midwest city. I think that's kind of how it goes. It's not the bitter rivalry like a college sports scene might have.
No, absolutely. I think that's dead on.
Well, Chris Manning, this was fun. I appreciate it. We're going to drop in with all the Central Division rivals and get their take on the season. And anything else you want to plug for some of the listeners or some things you got going on with the podcast that Pistons fans and NBA fans in general might be interested in?
Yeah, check out Fear the Sword. That is where most of my basketball writing is right now. You can read all of our great stuff in terms of season preview stories and breakdowns over there. And check out Locked On Cavs and check out everything we're doing over there. And if you want to read a Q&A I do with Colin Sexton, go to clevelandmagazine.com. They were nice enough to give me a full page in their most recent issue, which was headlined with the Q&A with Colin Sexton. And he was pretty fun to talk to. And if you go to Locked On Cavs, for October 2nd. If you're listening to this, you want to hear from Colin Sexton. Got an interview with him on there where he talks about Skittles and his pregame routine, and you kind of get a glimpse into what kind of a character the Cavs now have, and a guy that the Pistons will see here pretty shortly.
Yeah, and I covered him in his McDonald's All-American game in Chicago. I used to live there, and he was at the United Center, and he was the most electric player amongst all the great players that were there that year, Ayton and Bamba and all these guys. Colin Sexton was the electric one, was the guy that people couldn't take their eyes off of. So I think that Cleveland has, if nothing else, a very exciting player to kind of pin their franchise with over these next couple years.
Absolutely.
Thanks to Chris Manning for joining us here on the show. And like I said, what's your bold prediction for the season coming up for the Detroit Pistons? Reach out to us on the Google Voice line at 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666-1546. Send us a text or drop us a voicemail and let us know what your bold prediction is for the upcoming Pistons season. Thanks again to Chris Manning for joining us. Thanks to you guys for listening. And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Have a great day, everyone.